Before we dive in, two things. First, thank you. Listeners like you are why we do this. Our team works hard on every episode to ensure we bring you the best content possible. Second, it's a gift-giving time of year. People ask us all the time, what's your setup or what's your favorite gear? We put all of our favorites together in our new Generation Leader gift guide. Find recommendations for those hard to buy for people on your list and get them something great this year. Find the gift guide at newgenerationleader.fm/gift and we'll keep this up to date all year round. All right, let's get on with the show. If today's episode sounds like three friends talking, well, it is. Well, at least Brian and I are friends. Brian and Doug have been friends for a long time, and I've known of Doug for a long time. Today's conversation walks through Doug's story, but as Doug talks about his leadership journey, his experience as an athlete himself from fifth grade all the way up through high school, it dredged up stories for me and Brian alike. So we take a trip down memory lane from each of our sports experiences, but we also touch on the world where Doug now operates, leading and directing a sports venue in Gallenberg, Tennessee that hosts hundreds of teams a year. Doug's insights pave the way for what sports might look like as a tourist industry, as sports expand, and how we encourage and engage the new generation of young athletes. Let's dive in.
Welcome to the New Generation Leader Podcast. We're giving you the tools you need to lead in the digital world. Ready to reach your true potential? This is the New Generation Leader Podcast.
Doug, take us back to your earlier years and the beginning of your journey in sports. What was your sports journey like as an athlete?
Yeah, so, you know, I was in elementary school. Back then, sports wasn't, at least in the area I was in, wasn't, you know, you didn't live or die by it. Many travel teams, really. I was good enough to get attention, but wasn't a star. And so I got invited to join a travel team in the fifth grade. By travel team, there weren't AAU tournaments. There weren't stuff like that. We put a team of boys together, or they did, and we traveled to the Boys and Girls Club in downtown Dayton, Ohio, or we'd find a team out in Indiana. They were never tournaments. We didn't play. I don't know if we played in one tournament. We just go play a team. And I did that for 2 years. But the coach was Coach Ellis. And here's how I describe Coach Ellis. He was a Coach Wooden disciple and a Coach Knight imitator. Our team name was the Bruins. You know, he was nicknamed himself the Wizard. He had all these things, but he was, and I love Coach Knight. He just passed away recently. I loved Coach Knight growing up. And so I remember one time dribbling fifth grade in J.E. Price Elementary School in Kettering, Ohio. Tile floors, the cafeteria, the gym, the everything, right? And I'm dribbling the ball in the fifth grade and must have been looking down and didn't have my head up. And he blew the whistle. I was a pretty good kid in general, so I didn't get screamed at much. But he's like, "Groat, what are you looking at? What color is that line?" I went, "Well, it's red, sir." "Exactly. You shouldn't be looking at that." You know, and then it just went off. And so let me have it. And that was my first experience with what I would call a strong sports leadership. Now, I ended up enjoying that because I always knew where I stood. If a coach got on me, I knew where I stood. So I think that helped shape me not to take that stuff personally. And it didn't crush me when a coach got on me later in my years in high school and that. But that's how he did it. And so if you go forward to that, when I started coaching at a school, not in recreation, but in, you know, more competitive, I had to struggle with that was my example in this environment. And it started coming out. I was like, "Oh, well, where's this coming from? Little Coach Ellis in me." So that was interesting.
I had to think, Doug, and Aaron, you don't know this about Doug, but Doug's probably, what are you, like 6'5"? So
6'4".
6'4", yeah. So I can imagine this hulking Doug. So little young kids are just like cowering down to them. So, yeah, that's interesting. I think that's a throwback a little bit too, Doug, because even me, I'm, I don't know, 10 or 15 years older. I don't know what our age difference is, but we came through at the time where if the coach wasn't yelling at you, it was because he didn't care about you. Like, you weren't important. And that was a different thing. So even with me coming through coaching through high school, it took a long time to get rid of that part and just realize, you know, I can still care about the kids without screaming all the time.
So, yeah.
But it was definitely something that took a little bit of getting over or changing. So.
Yeah. And balancing, I mean, I'm a true believer in business that you lead to the person. You just don't lead and expect everyone to follow. Well, the same thing goes into coaching. You lead to the athlete. And so I learned when I eventually was coaching varsity basketball that there were some kids that ate that up. They loved a drill sergeant. And there were some kids that if I came too hard, I'm going to crush them and they're going to go in the corner and never hit a basket again. And so it was learning that as well as just knowing, you know, it's all still a limit. I didn't need to be a Coach Ellis, Bob Knight. I needed their wisdom on basketball knowledge, but not necessarily the antics at that level I was at.
As you were coming through younger than ministry days and even back at Cool Spring Baptist when you first started there, did you ever find yourself needing feedback from those above you? And what I mean by that is with Kenner, with our older son, a big thing for him in the workforce early on when he first started, if he wasn't getting feedback from someone, like if they weren't constantly telling me he's doing a good job or he needs to do something different or do this better, it bothered him. So when he got to work, they were just letting him do his job. He constantly needed feedback. He just wasn't used to sort of being turned loose to go do his job. It took him a little while to get through that. Did you ever experience any of that?
Yeah, well, I always said, and this now it's a cliche, so almost, just tell me the sandbox I'm in. Like, I want that feedback. You know, if I'm outside the sandbox, tell me to get back to the sandbox. But when I'm in the sandbox, let me go. And I really felt that I had that at Cool Spring. I had people that would, you know, if I did something crazy, they would be like, hey, really, that's not who we are here. I mean, I remember putting Elvis, I don't know if you remember this, I had an Elvis cutout,
yeah,
and I put it at the front desk and just welcome people, you know, just having a little fun. Someone pulled me aside, it's like, hey, it's not really, you know, we don't want Elvis out there. And so it's silly, right? But still, it was, I can remember the first staff meeting that of me at the church. And I don't know the first staff meeting, I take that back, early. And there was a 5K coming up, and I had put in the bulletin, we're going to go run the 5K. It was for a local kid who had cancer. I can't remember his name now. And no brainer, recreation ministry, run. There's a 5K, support a community. But well, come to find out, no one had told me that we don't do charity events back then. Yeah. And the reason was there was a staff member who had a child, and there was a lot of, we don't want to show favoritism to one or another, yeah, whatever. And that staff member brought it up. We don't do this because that had been denied at that time. And I just remember sitting there going, do I got to cancel? And they're like, no, we'll let this go. And then I said, I'll do whatever you want me to do, but I need to know in advance. So yeah, absolutely need to spoken into.
And think back too about that is you came into a role that no one really knew what to do or how to tell you to do what you were going to do. It was brand new to all of us. Fortunately for us, I'll make your head a little larger here. You were the right person. I mean, we hired, you know, we struck gold. And we did when you moved on. Greg was also the home run for us. So let's talk about that a little bit. Let's talk about, for those who may not know, let's talk a little bit about Upward and bringing that into the church and how that changed and maybe leading through that, maybe some growth you might have seen in some of the guys or ladies who stepped up to help. What leading that was like, leading something, again, you're in a brand new position in a brand new building. And you're bringing something else brand new. So
yeah, well,
any stories you remember about that?
Yeah. So we're building a facility. I come on in July. We're hoping it's open in October, not opening up until January. But I took the gamble in July to launch the beginnings of Upward Basketball at our church. Upward's a parachurch organization nationwide. They help churches run rec leagues. So I'm like, well, we're going to open up in October, young and naive and all that, and where every brick's going to be perfectly placed at the rec center. We're going to open up on time and had support of that. And we get going. And I remember we had that first year, 343 kids. That's how many registered that first year, which was stinking a lot. And then practice is supposed to start late October, November, and the facility wasn't going to be ready. And that was craziness for sure. And then in the year two, we jumped from 343 to over 900 in year two. I remember Brunetti's. Is Brunetti's still there?
Yeah.
In Hanover, next to Brunetti's was an empty grocery store. I remember looking through the grocery store thinking, can I put basketball hoops in here? And going anywhere, going to the air park, because we didn't have the space and two-court gym.
So, and then that blew up into a partnership with the community and other churches and turned out really good. So a lot of bumps and bruises along the way, for sure. I think there was a lot of that, you know, talk about God's blessing. And we're in a community ripe with young people, and we just struck at the right time as well and offering what was needed in that community. And so it just blew up. I remember running the numbers one between all the sports we ran. We had over 1,700 individual kids throughout the year between basketball, football, soccer, and cheerleading. And that was really cool. But yeah, I made a lot of mistakes along the way. I can remember being indecisive year two, sitting in the coaches' meeting. Remember Fitz Rogers? I don't know if you remember that name. Fitz was actually not a member of our church in our first year of running basketball. My office, because the recreation complex wasn't done yet, my office was in the church library, which is kind of funny because me and books, right? So, So Fitz walks in out of the blue, and I had made the decision we're going to advertise Upward Basketball like we've always done it. We're not the new basketball league. We're the basketball league, and you should sign up here. And we're not, you know. And Fitz walked in and goes, "Hey, I'm Fitz Rogers." And, "Hey, Fitz." He goes, "I go to a different church down the road. What's this Upward thing? Is this your first year?" "Wow, blah, blah, blah." He was my first coach to sign up. So huge supporter from the get-go. And year two, sitting in the coaches' meeting, went from 300-some kids to 900-some kids. And we're trying to figure out divisions. Because now, when you first start, you think first and second, third and fourth, fifth and sixth back then. And now we had enough kids in first for their own division, second for their own division, third for their own division. And we didn't know what to do. Do we keep them combined or do we not? And there was this debate going. And I remember Fitz out there sitting in the seat, looking up at me and going, "Will you just make a decision?" And I was like, "Wait a minute, Fitz, you love me. Like, why are you being critical?" But that indecisiveness, you know, there was some lack of leadership there in the moment. I was trying to be cohesive, which I'll talk about this, but really, I just want to know what to do. So I remember that story. I also remember a guy, Tripp, who's no longer with us, unfortunately, and loved Tripp remarkably well. And he coached in our Upward League, and he loved the kids. But when he coached, when he yelled, he didn't realize how loud his voice was. He just didn't realize it. And I finally walked up to him. I was like, "Tripp, you know," and I kind of explained. And he was so taken back because he didn't realize his voice didn't match his heart. And he didn't mean to be that way. And I didn't have any complaints about him. It was just, "Hey, you're my buddy. I love you. I'm your rep minister. Here's how this comes." And it really caused him to really think through how he did what he did. So, you know, those are some of the stories of me being able to speak into someone else, but also people inadvertently speaking into me through that time and through that experience at Cool Spring.
Walk us through, Doug, your progression then from that role. Now, your leadership growth story. We've touched on fifth grade. We've touched on this role, and you mentioned being early, the lessons you were learning in leadership. What's the rest of that leadership journey? And as you tell that story, get us caught up to where you are today in sports.
All right. Yeah. So was at Cool Spring. Wonderful. At Cool Spring in Virginia, where I was a recreation minister. Wonderful experience. Grew so much. Talk about as green as you can get. And then leaving there with a lot more experience and wisdom to work with Upward Sports, the national organization, oversaw the national team there that worked with churches. First thing I learned when I moved into that role, it ain't church anymore. And what I mean by that was, up until that point, if I saw potential in someone, man, come on. And I could see where you're going, right? That's what church should be. We don't try to see it as an end product. We take you where you are and help you get to where you need to be, where God wants you to be. And so we had 90 volunteers that ran the recreation center at Cold Spring. We were totally volunteer run. And they took 90, but they did it. And I didn't care if who you were. If you said, "I'm interested and I like people," I take you because I figured I can get you there. Fast forward to now, I'm on a real job, so to speak. I don't know if that's the right term. And I want to hire like that. You don't hire on potential for the most part. There's a resume. There's experience. There's someone's in an interview and they're like, "I could just see that they were going to be good." But man, I'd get shot down left and right. "Well, they don't have this. They don't have that." I'm like, "Yeah, but it's a really good person. You know, I see the potential." And that was one of my early experiences of how I had to change how I look that really didn't fit me at that time because I was more come as you are. We'll get you where you need to be. And so that was early on one of the lessons I learned. And then we'd go around the country and train churches and their leadership on how to train coaches, how to train lead leagues, how to do all that stuff to do a good job of running a rec league within your church and your community. So I did that for 7-8 years. So eventually, you know, one of my dreams growing up, it was to have an office in a gym and my kids get off the bus and walk into my office in the gym. I don't know where I got that, but I always thought it would be the coolest thing. Like my office is in a gym, my kids get off the bus from school and here they walk in. Well, when I left Cool Spring, my kids weren't even at school yet. And so it's like, well, okay, Lord, I'm going to this organization. Now my office is in the basement with no windows and we don't even have a basketball court here. I guess that was my dream, not yours. That's cool. And so and then about 8 years in and upward, they said, hey, we're going to build this sports complex. And I went, bingo, that is me. And so we had upward, we built a 120,000 square foot building on 16 acres with basketball, volleyball, baseball, soccer, football, lacrosse. We did everything. And I moved into a GM role there of overseeing the sports complex that ran community programming and tournaments on the weekends. We were a 7-day-a-week operation. And then building that up from, I was the first guy, and then building the team from there that would go from zero money to a $2 million a year revenue producer with a fantastic team that reached 1,000 kids in our community and also reached beyond our community with tournaments. Did that for 7-8 years. And eventually it was time for me to move over there. And where I am today is in Gallenberg, Tennessee. And we got mountain coasters to cotton candy to whatever you name, whatever you think of. And I'm at a very similar complex, 6 basketball courts, volleyball courts, and 7 turf fields outside running this organization here in Gatlinburg. And I've been up here about a year. And this difference here is the team's already established. So that's been a difference for me. At Cool Spring, I started from scratch. When I was at Upward and we built a complex, I started from scratch. Here I walk in. You know, my assistant GM's been here 6 years. My business development director's been here 5 years. My operations manager's been here 3 years. So I have to jump into where they are as opposed to creating everything and saying, join me. And it's a little bit different.
College athletics is in the midst of colossal changes. From NIL to the transfer portal and conference realignment, athletics programs are facing mounting pressure. How are these pressure points affecting your leadership? The waves of change require a different approach to building programs, leading teams and departments, developing players, directing coaches, and in how you think about athletics. It's becoming too easy to leave and too hard to create trust. This requires you to think better, communicate better, lead better, perform better, be better, every single day. Better can help. Better has built the very best of 21st century leadership thinking and tied world-class content to simple technology to help ADs, administrators, coaches, and athletes thrive in the midst of the chaos the athletic world is facing. As a listener of the show, Better is offering a unique opportunity for your college program or high school team. Better starts with you. Learn more at newgenerationleader.fm/better.
If you're anything like me, keeping up with all the people you know is hard. I forgot Tom's birthday. I had a meeting in town and forgot Jamie lives here now. Who was that strategic planner I met last year? Clay is a game changer for me. It puts all of my connections, contacts, text messages, LinkedIn connections, all in one place, reminding me about what and who is most important. Then, every morning, Clay's AI engine reminds me, birthdays, who I should reconnect with, and lets me take notes so I remember important details. Safe, secure, and thoughtful. Clay, the AI-powered system for cultivating amazing personal and professional relationships. Try Clay for free today at newgenerationleader.fm/clay.
Well, you are in a beautiful spot, one of our family's favorite regions. I always describe it for people that it's incredible people watching. And you're right at the front door of the national park. So it's also incredible nature views. And you were talking before we started recording that the view outside your office window is pretty incredible. And looking at the website, that's absolutely the case. So we'll link to your current home in the show notes, newgenerationleader.fm slash 5-6. So, Doug, as you're hosting and welcoming teams in, I'd imagine with the rise of travel sports, you've got teams coming in to Gatlinburg from all over the country. What are you seeing today from coaches? You know, go back to your fifth grade experience. What kind of style are you seeing these youth coaches bring as they're coming into your facility now?
Yeah, I don't know if this is going to surprise you in the answer or not, but it really depends on the foundation of the coach. Every time we got coaches that come in here, you can tell or have a good foundation and structure and a philosophy of coaching and so forth. And interesting, when you come across those coaches, you're in a support mode more, right? We're just here to help you be you. And then you've got the other extreme where everybody's evil. Everyone's out to get you. Even the kids, if they don't do right, yell, scream, all that stuff. And then we're not in a support role. We're in a management role then and so forth. So I think coaching has evolved greatly, that as far as resource-wise, as far as there's much more spotlight on it, that those out of control, I would say out of control coaches in structured environments are tempered down, structured meaning schools, colleges, et cetera. But in the recreation world, there's less structure. And so, unfortunately, I think it's worse in that travel arena sometimes, because in some sports, and maybe all sports, that coach is all there is. They decided to put a team together. And without that, these kids don't get a chance to play. And so that's where you see some of the, you know, I think more extreme coaching styles that, you know, on one end, they're giving the kids a chance, right? And they're making that happen for them. But on the other end, there's those other things that maybe aren't so positive.
Yeah, I have a friend coaching travel league team here locally. He also coaches high school basketball, coaches travel softball, and he just made a move from one travel softball organization to another one. And part of it was around structure. And so for him as a coach in the old organization, he was doing all of the communication and organization, travel planning, all the details fell on him as coach. Obviously, in that organization, there wasn't a lot of accountability, structure, other people to build values. And he's moved now to a place that has much more structure and organization. But I see that even in his stories, the distinction between the small team that's just a team or a few versus an organization and an entity.
For sure. It's the way it is. I mean, we got two big tournaments coming up. The weekend before Thanksgiving and Thanksgiving. It's called the Gatlinburg Thanksgiving Bowl. And games on Thanksgiving Day, day after, and Saturday. And the tournament the weekend before, 70 football teams going to be here. And then Thanksgiving, right now we have 68 teams signed up for the 51st Gatlinburg Thanksgiving Bowl. And, you know, we're preparing ourselves because we've been in a slow season, so we've kind of relaxed, put our guards down, and we're already been talking, all right, we got to get ready. You know, we got to be sure we're placed, be able to control the crowd, kind of barriers we're going to have up to what kind of, what we're going to do when this happens or that happens. So, but yeah, I mean, we'll see the whole extreme there at those tournaments of the good, the bad, and the ugly, right? And obviously you want more good, but, you know, the hope is that way you handle someone here maybe catches them, you know, maybe just makes them think for a second that changes the trajectory of what they're doing. And sometimes you can't. You're just in crisis mode and you're like, you got to take care of it. But yeah, you hope you can make a difference in it.
Doug, I'd like to go back for just a second, if you don't mind, because you said something earlier about Cool Spring you built at Upward you built.
Yeah.
And then you come to Gatlinburg and you inherit, right? So for lack of a better term. So for you, did you have to make any adjustments in your own leadership style early on, where you went from building everything and even with restrictions at Upward and bringing in who you wanted to bring in, you inherit a team? Just talk a little bit about how the difference is in that versus what you had done at the other two locations.
Yeah. So the other two locations, you can be an activator. I'm an activator, task orientated. Let's go get it. We don't need to think about it. We don't need to debate it. I know what to do. Let's do it. Right. When you come into this situation, you can't be an activator right away. Now, if the organization was falling off a cliff, you know, that's different. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about a healthy organization, a good team. So I really had to come in and listen, watch, and learn, and ask why. And they heard me ask why. So why do we do it that way? Why is that policy in place? So if I saw something that didn't make sense to me, I needed to understand the why behind it, because then if I understood the why, it might make total sense here where it wouldn't have where I came from. So I really had to slow down. Still, to this day, almost a year in, slow down, be careful, because one of the things that drives me nuts that a lot of leaders do is they put down the past to promote the future. And I hate that, because the past was right for the past. Whatever happened then, happened then for a reason. It's getting you so you can have that next step of the future. So the one thing I really make sure I don't do is put down that past to make them feel like they weren't adding up. Like they worked their rear ends off to get us to this point. We're already at 1.7 million. We're already at 225,000 athletes a year. We're already at 157 events a year. Like, good job. We just need to tweak a little bit. So when you're starting from scratch, you're just hoping for registration number one, you know? And so you're building a team and being really driven that way. So it's a very unique, it's been a different experience for me, for sure, in a good way. And to join them and let them know I'm a partner here. I'm not here to ruin your world. Let's just see what we can do better together.
Really cool. I was going back really quickly. I was going to look up your five voices. I know that you are a nurturer. I do remember that.
Yeah. You were surprised at that.
I was. I told you that I was surprised by it. Aaron, you'll find this interesting, I think. So early on, I forget, maybe I'm trying to go back and look at the date. So it was July of last year, actually. So he's a nurturer, connector, creative. But I was surprised. I thought Doug was going to be pioneer. I knew connector was going to be there. But it had a lot to do with my engagement with Doug, because I saw Doug as literally everything about pioneer. Admittedly, I think he'll tell you there was occasionally times where it was ready, fire, aim, but he tested as a nurturer. And I went back to ask my youngest son, who was around Doug a lot when he was really small, what he remembers. He goes, "What's the one that when you care for people?" And I was like, "Yeah, that's how I tested." But it was interesting. I think one of the things probably that made me proud for Doug, that's how everyone he came in contact with saw him that way. So the workers with him probably see him more as a pioneer because they'll follow him wherever he goes. So he literally is the embodiment of being a leader that others want to follow as opposed to have to follow. And that's kind of what I was wondering about coming into this role where they're already in place. Your assistants are there. What's it like to win them over so they do want to follow you as opposed to, you know, when you're building your teams? I just thought that was it. I thought it was interesting. And I thought Aaron would probably be interested to know what your voice order was as well.
Yeah.
I think, Doug, going back to how and where and when Brian knew you at Cool Spring launching something, there's the launching component of, hey, let's build it from scratch. But organizationally, you also stepped into an organization that at least had the vision to build the facility. And the same at Upward. You had an organization that was ready to build the facility. And I'll go back. Part of what you said earlier doesn't surprise me about those results, despite the fact that you did, yes, pioneer in both of those in launching it. But you talked about in those 90 volunteers, you were looking for potential and wanting to make the people around you better and help them see their potential. And that, I think, is how the Nurture Connector Guardian brings that pioneering to life is, yes, there's a vision, but I'm going to make you better. And when I make you better, that's going to propel us forward.
Yeah, 100%. I've always believed, probably not this crass, but be the dumbest guy in the room, right? And the best way for me to do that is to elevate those around me and invest in them. And yeah, I've always said, hire the experts. And if you hire the experts, then all you got to do is block and tackle for them. You know, get stuff out of the way and let them take off. And I always believe that. But yeah, I get Brian's side too, because when we think about that, Brian, I can remember something your wife said years ago. We were building this rec center. It wasn't ready. So we went back to the contractors and said, we've got 300 kids signed up. You said it'd be ready. What are you going to do? Well, the greatest thing, I had never heard of this before. Haven't heard of it since. We didn't have a fire alarm system to, if there was a fire. So for us to practice in the gym, we didn't have basketball hoops yet. We had to bring in portables. We didn't have anything. I don't know if there was paint on the wall for the first practice. But in order to be able to get a temporary occupancy, so we at least have practices, we had all these kids, the contractor provided a fire watcher. And literally, one of his guys would come during practice and walk the facility. And if there was going to be a fire, he'd run out and go, fire. he was a fire alarm and we'd all run out. But I can remember getting prepared for that first night, and a bunch of people showed up because we had to sweep up sawdust. We had to put down stuff to protect the floor. We had to do all this stuff. We had to bring in portable hoops. I don't know if you remember that night at all, Brian, but we had to clean everything. We had to bring them in the side doors because the front entrance wasn't done. And I'm kind of standing in the middle of the gym as people walk in and said, hey, there's a broom over there. Hey, there's something to clean over there. Hey, we need this. Hey, I need, you know, I'm just directing. Like, I remember Ann goes, and I didn't know Ann very well in the interview. I've been there 3 months. I remember Ann saying, well, one thing's for sure, he knows how to delegate. And that's all I had to do. I was like, we had all this done. And it was great. And I took that as a compliment. I was like, yeah, because I could not do this by myself. Speaking of which, still in my notes and contacts, Brian, when I first got to Cool Spring, church was so big, it was hard for me to keep up with who I was meeting. Still in my contacts, I have in my notes who you are, what you do, the age of your children. So if I run into you again, I can go, oh, yeah, one of your kids is Zach, right? You know, so back in the day. But I see if you're starting something from scratch, you have no choice but to go after it. You don't have time to. And then once you get it going, then the nurturing probably takes place. I told Brian when he said it surprised him. I said, well, that's my ministerial side would bring out the nurture in me.
Well, Brian, the fact that he took notes about everybody he met, that's another telltale sign right there. Because
I didn't know that. That was new to me.
I've had to learn how to do that as a hack, just so everybody
thought he had this wonderful memory.
Even that first days, I had a little, very first days. So I knew what to put in my contacts. A little notepad on a spiral I kept in my back pocket. And when someone would walk up to me, I'd walk away and write it down real quick and then shove it back in my pocket so no one would see. So next time I saw them, I would know who they were.
Work smarter, not harder, right?
That's what yeah. As you get older, you'll make that habit back.
Yeah, no doubt.
Doug, as you look at the landscape of youth sports, I know for us back here in Central Virginia, Henrico County just opened a big new facility. My daughter has a gymnastics competition there in a few weeks, so I'm excited to see that take shape. They're really pushing and working on facilities all around. So it's not reached its peak yet. It's continuing to evolve and expand. What do you see in the future of maybe the near future, far off future of youth sports?
Great question. The culture of the aspirational culture is changing. Now you can make money in college. So now that's changed the mindset even more when you're dealing in youth sports for those in the competitive space and the, not necessarily the recreational, but that next step. So that's still fleshing out how that's going to change things. I know I saw a lawsuit that was happening when the athlete got injured, and that was part of the lawsuit, my future earnings in NIL. And so that just changes the game a little bit more. Before it was, we got to get them to college, and then that now the money's going to be the next step. So that changes. I also think communities have figured out sports tourism, and that's really what you're talking about with those facilities. Henrico or here in Gatlinburg or in Spartanburg or wherever, they figured out that, and they're still building for that. They figured out sports tourism isn't for the community. Yeah, we can do something for the kids, but we get a whole family here, and then they spend their money in our restaurants and our activities. And all. And so the facility bottom line may not look great, but the tax revenue looks fantastic. And so they understand that. So that's a driving force. What communities want to bring more people. That's why you're seeing more facilities. Really, when we built Upward, you know, 10 years ago, we built the Upward Star Center, and then this facility was built the same time frame. They opened up 3 months before we did. I actually brought my team up here to watch their grand opening. So when we did our grand opening, we could be better, just better. I don't say that too loud. And now they're popping up everywhere. Everyone's figuring out sports tourism. And so that's going to drive to more opportunities, I believe, which is hard to believe. One of the reasons why I believe Upward, the recreation ministry, Cool Spring, started off so hot and so fast. There's a lot of reasons go into that. And I don't take away God's hand in any of that. But some of the factors was the opportunities weren't as big and weren't as many. Now there's a lot of opportunities, and I think that's a good thing. But I just think it's going to keep growing that way. At some point, it's going to level out. I don't know when that is. So that's the kind of facility in the sports. I just think the culture's changing. It's going to trickle down from what we're seeing in the aspirational stuff.
Well, I know as you look through the levels of sports, my oldest is now in middle school, and I'm noticing the middle school teams today look more like the JV teams from when I was in school, and the JV teams look like the varsity teams, and varsity looks like a college team, and college down to NIL deals, they're starting to look a little more professional. And so there's this advancement in each tier of sports from youth through college, and everybody's working harder, focused a little bit more on it. And I hadn't thought about that NIL aspiration and the impact on youth sports. And I always thought, hey, we're not going to do that. And here we are with a year-round gymnast who's competing, practicing multiple days a week. But I'm watching, and we're watching, our friends whose daughters are also on the team are also watching the physical side and the team side, not just the personal side, and recognizing, hey, this is for their development. We're not thinking about that end goal yet, at least. She's only 9. So she's only halfway to the finish line at 18 and figuring out where to go next with that. So for where they are right now, we're going to love it. We're going to cheer her and her teammates on. And it's been a great way to connect and engage. I sit here as you talk back through that period at Cool Spring. I was at Bon Air, upwards on the south side.
Really? So you know Garth Lindsay?
Oh yeah, Garth's a great guy. Just reconnected with him within the last couple of years. So watching that, and now, like you said, we have the travel teams and the I-9s and Soccer Shots we're working with, have friends in Soccer Shots in the Twin Cities and here in Richmond, and just lots of opportunities for kids to engage in sports, which is good.
I can remember two things talking about those opportunities. When we started what we did at Cool Spring, the county already had a basketball league and had 700 or 800 kids in it. It was strong. And I used to always say, the coolest thing to me is when we grew to 900, they still had 700, 800 kids in their league. We didn't destroy them, didn't want to destroy them. Loved having, we just doubled. I always said, I don't know if it ever came true. Man, high school is going to be awesome in 10 years because look how many more kids are playing in this community. And so that was a good thing. But I also remember when I-9 popped up in our community, good organization, all that good stuff. But, you know, my mind, we were, between us and the county, we had it all. We didn't need anybody else. And I just remember telling the team, it's okay, right? We'll do our thing. We'll be the best at what we can do. We'll let everyone else figure it out. We don't need to tell anyone we're the best. We'll just be the best and go from there. But those opportunities are just there. And I think going back, talking about your daughter in gymnastics, I look back and I never felt like I was over, you know, I didn't push my kids over. You know, I just fed fuel to whatever dream they had, right, at that moment. And it's one of the things I love about my parents. Didn't have a lot of money. I didn't know that. Tell you how much money we didn't have. I remember my dad buying a Bonneville. A great car, 2 couches for seats, right? Front seats a couch, back seats a couch. But it was in Ohio. You have a lot of rust in Ohio. And when he bought it for $50, you could see through the floorboard. But my parents never said no to any sport I wanted to do. And I never thought about it. I wasn't a spoiled kid, but I played travel soccer, travel basketball, you know, high school, junior high, and all that. Now, I may not have the best, you know, shoes and all that. I got a great story on that one too. It involved Coach Sutton from the University of Kentucky, but I'll come back to that. But that's all you got to do, right? Feed that fire. And in a year, she's like, I don't want to do backflips anymore. Well, good. You figured that out. Let's figure out what's next or whatever. Let me tell you my shoe story real quick. I went to the University of Kentucky basketball camp. I was like a sophomore in high school. And it's when Coach Eddie Sutton was coaching the University of Kentucky. And so went down there, you know, really cool. It's when I learned what a lot of those camps are. And for that point, they knew who their athletes were that they really wanted. And they were over here. And then you had 1,000 other kids that were just kind of shuffled through. Yeah, learning experience for me. But you did get a picture with Coach Sutton. So my parents, I was telling my brother the story the other day. We were laughing about it. My parents doing their best things they could. We went to Big Lots. And there were a pair of Converse high tops. And I bought a pair of Converse high tops. What was unique about them was the top part was Velcro. So you laced up and then you Velcroed. No other shoe out there looked like that. There's a reason why they were at the discount store, right? But man, they were Converse, which was big back then. Got them. So I sit down next to Eddie Sutton, hold a basketball, And I'm sure he meant nothing by it, but, you know, he looks down at my shoes, goes, huh, nice shoes. I walked away going, man, he knows we got him at Big Lots or Odd Lots or what, you know. It just crushed my spirit. He didn't mean it, right? But it just crushed my spirit. But my parents supported me in whatever I chased. And I never heard about money. And they couldn't afford it, but they figured it out.
That's great.
And I think that's the most important thing as a parent.
It's funny talking about shoes. I remember three pairs of shoes that I had. Two of them were team issued or for a team. You know, when you get to the level where you got to have shoes that are court only. So in high school, we had team issued. Everybody ordered. Everybody got the same ones. I wish I still had them because they were probably the nicest Nikes I've owned even to this day. They were great shoes. In sixth grade, I had a similar pair. We had to go to the store and get them, but that was the most I remember we ever splurged, so to speak. And it was probably similar somewhere like Big Lots. The third pair I distinctly remember was not from Big Lots. They weren't even from the brand name at a discount store. These were from Payless, and they had the little button. And this was the era where you could pump up your shoes. Well, mine just had the button. It didn't actually do anything. All my friends could actually pump up their shoes. Mine just looked like I could.
But did you act like it, though? When they pumped theirs, did you go ahead and push that thing, didn't you?
Pushed that button as much as I could.
No, it's funny. It brings back a lot of memories. I wish I'd known how popular Chuck Taylor's was going to come back to being, because I would have kept all of them.
yeah, for sure.
Doug, there's an awful lot of stories, and when we go off air here, I want to bring up our New Orleans trip for Aaron a little bit, too. Maybe we'll come back or another podcast one day and talk about that on the air, but it's been great having you, Aaron. I don't know if you want to wrap this up so Doug can go have lunch here. I know that was a big thing that we wanted to make sure we didn't interrupt.
And make sure we hit that mark.
Yes, indeed. Well, Doug, I think more so than any of the other stories, I can tell the chemistry that you and Brian have had in life experience and knowing each other for these past years. I won't say how many, though I can guess, based on the era we've talked about. That's made our conversation today, I think, all the more fun. And so thanks for helping me take a trip down my own memory lane with some of your stories. And I hope the insights for our listeners will help set them up for how they can lead their families, lead their kids, coach their kids and coach in the community, but also coach the leaders they're working with as they're going to work each and every day. So thanks for diving in, and you can connect with Doug, and we'll have the show notes at newgenerationleader.fm/56. Thanks, Doug. Appreciate you.
Thank you all very much. What a blessing.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to the New Generation Leader podcast. Subscribe today on your podcasting platform. Download the show notes and unlock your true leadership potential at newgenerationleader.fm. Thanks for listening today, and we look forward to seeing you next time on the New Generation Leader podcast.
Thanks again for listening to today's show. Don't forget to check out the New Generation Leader gift guide at newgenerationleader.fm/gift. Thanks to Brian, Jim, Jay, and the team behind the scenes. We'll see you next time on the New Generation Leader podcast.